Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod after another classic Bledisloe Cup test. This time not so close, but the All Blacks look pretty polished this time around. I'm Ross Carl, joined by James Parsons and Bryn Hall. And boys, let's start off with, where did you watch this game? Because it was a cracker.
Well, I watched it sideline, actually. I was doing some commentary for ZB. I had a great vantage point, and it certainly was physical. It was fast-paced, and it was hot out there. And it would have been, you know, tough for both sides. But for my part, the way the All Blacks played, the tempo of the speed of their game, the work that Nick Gill's obviously done with them over a number of months, they looked like they withstood the heat and the tempo a little bit better than the Aussie boys for the full 80. And I think that paid dividends. You know, the scoreline wasn't so drastic at half time, but what I was saying in the comments is just watching their body language and the way, you know, sort of the All Blacks were getting to things first. And, you know, there was a lot of tired boys out there in the Wallabies. And it was like, I was saying that this is going to pay dividends. And I was thinking more 60 to 80, but it was, you know, after the break, and then the rest was history from there.
I'll tell you what I saw, Jipper, mate. I think you saw the intent very early. Dane Coles off that, getting into that little tussle early on. And I think, mate, that just set the tone for the match, I thought. And there's a real edge and a real, a mindset shift, I reckon. I reckon the physicality and the, that 40 minutes, like what a barnstorming half it was. And then, like you said, I think the tempo, and we've talked about it the last couple of times with their click attack and the offloads, the KBA game was immense from both teams, actually. But, you know, I thought the All Blacks, mate, when they had those little offloads off turnovers, and I remember Michael Hooper talking about it in the press conference as well, and they thought there was a massive reason why they lost the game. And missed tackles, I thought, as well. A lot of missed tackles from the Australians, a lot of missed tackles, which you can't think that was against an Aussie team.
That was due to the conditions and the fatigue. It wasn't, you know, sometimes wet weather can even things up because you're never going to be pushed to your limits physically. Mm. And as I said, it was really hot, and all those fatigue led to, I think they had 11 turnovers, whereas this week, 11 turnovers last week to 20 odd this week. Mm. And then the All Blacks obviously went the other way. They had 21 and they were down into 12. Yeah. So, you know, that conditioning, I reckon, was a big factor in it.
I'll tell you one thing that I found very surprising, Jip, and no doubt we'll get into the details around it a bit later. But we talked about Nick White, and very interesting that in Wellington, a lot was played off nine, whereas this test match, it was a lot off 10.
Oh, they tried to play off nine a lot, though, but defensively they'd made a shift.
Mm.
I thought, because when the tempo was up, the Wallabies looked good, and that was all off Nick White. But then they played off 10 a lot off that slow ball, and then they lost to Moore, and it just sort of stagnated things. But, like, from the sideline, like, when White ran and it was fast ball, shit, that, you know, it was just that skill execution, that last sort of pass that got them. But, you know, they were held up over the line there, which was freakish by Mwanga and Anton Leonard-Brown. But yeah, I still think they tried hard to play off nine, but there was much better defensive decision making by the All Blacks of when to jam and when to sort of be passive and let them go. I don't think they went away from that purposefully. I think they were probably forced into that a little bit.
I think it comes back to your point around it, that execution as well. I think when they did play at speed, like talking around off Nick White, and then actually playing off 10, they actually had a lot of opportunities where the All Blacks had actually made defensive reads on the block plays. Quite a lot we talk about Dinganu and Richie held him up and that kind of stuff. And there were times when they penetrated right through the line, but that last pass, that last kind of drops, I don't know how many drops Corabidi had, but unfortunately he had a few in the game, which were really big in the scheme of things. So it'd be interesting to see if they play that same game plan in Australia, when it'll obviously be drier conditions as well. But yeah, I thought the All Blacks did really well to negate Nick White, who I think we talked about has had an absolute blinder last week.
Bryn, just for the layman, what is a block play?
Sorry, just a little, it's like a rugby league play. So you've got the guy going down line and then the guy at the back. So they had around
it's,
with...
It's like a short ball runner on your shoulder and a guy out the back.
Yeah. And so the Australians off face play, when they're playing off 10, they did that a lot. And even on the edge play, they played that a lot. So they got a lot of dividends out of that. So, you know, I'd pretty be sure they'll be trying to keep that moving forward, because they did get a lot of breaks, and, you know, it could be a different story with a couple of tries as well.
That's the exciting thing about this, isn't it? Like, you see a game and then a second game completely different. When you play the same team, what's going to be four times in a row, the story evolves. Game change, plans change. It makes it so much more interesting than playing one-off test matches.
Well, we just sort of spoke about the conditions being a big factor in Wellington conditions, you know, so they're going to another set of conditions now in Australia and you know, an environment, touring together, things like that, that change it. And, you know, it is so much of it is the ability to get up mentally again. Like, if you look at, if you look at the first game, there was no pressure on the Wallabies. Like, no one really gave them a chance. All the pressure was on the All Blacks. Bang, they got 16 all draw. I would say the pressure got released off the All Blacks a little bit. Still a hell of a lot, because they needed to bounce back. And obviously, you know, there was escalating that they'd lost their aura from Campese and all that. So, but that was probably fuel to motivate it, got them away from the pressure of the outcome, more like, no, we're going to prove you wrong, which they inevitably did. But then there was a huge expectation on the Wallabies. There was changes to their team. And then it was just like, right, you know, like, we expect it to be as close, if not for them to have a victory at Eden Park. And maybe that change in week as well, and that environmental pressure potentially played against them.
It's amazing, AJ, that you know, that 1 or 2% if you're off, that's all it takes in a test match. And you know, you come, sorry,
I interviewed Colsey, and that's exactly what he said. He goes, we were 1 or 2% off last week, and
yeah,
16 all. And he goes, this week we were on, you know, on the money. And yeah, it sounds ridiculous that when you say 1 or 2%, yeah, but it is. If you're just not meticulous enough in your prep,
yep,
you will fall short somewhere.
Mm. People like me probably struggle to understand that completely. You know, like, if you hear it in the talkback callers and things, and they go, okay, well, you're paid to play this game, how can you be 1 or 2% off? You know, you should turn up. But those tiny fractions, like, you know, the game of inches speech from any given Sunday, that stuff's true.
Oh, well, you look at that first half, you think about the physicality. You know, we talked about it last week, the collision area where Australia were really good, where I thought the All Blacks were outstanding in that department. You know, the likes of Kane again, who was tremendous in that form of the game. And then, you know, the likes of Shannon Frizzell, who got two turnovers early on in that breakdown. And then collectively, you know, I thought Tupo Vai, for a guy that's just come in very early on his career to put in a shift like that, you know, I thought it was impressive. And Matt, we've talked about Paddy as well, Jip.
Yeah.
I thought he was tremendous.
I have to say it. I think them shifting to three forwards outside nine made a big difference on Richie.
Yeah. Yep.
On Richie and on the group. One, they could have direct carries. And let me just, I'll just talk through this. So there was a moment where they were just carrying, obviously, and Richie was running out the back but not getting the ball carrying. He finally got the ball in the first half, out the back, and he plays to Kane. Kane gets a gain line carry right in behind. Bang, get him behind. Then there's an error. So, but they were hot on, like, that. It worked a treat. And Richie just looked good, you know, like running out the back and as that arc. Straight after halftime, before Geordie Barrett scores, instead of going through that three-man pod, they go straight to Moanga, slow line speed. Because I'd shown that three-man pod, Aussie were like, oh, bang to Coles. They've jammed in, they've tried to cover it. Richie's running flat to line, bang to Coles. Coles goes through, Geordie scores them. And then finally, they hit a ruck there, and then Moanga is so flat with Paddy on his outside, another guy on his inside, and he's just a boom. Paddy goes through, offloads to Sam Kane, and then scores. But it's all on the back of that ability to play well, dominance first. So they've set them up in the first half by going dominant. Then they've pulled trigger and allowed Moonga to have his game, and he's picked off guys that we spoke about in that holes. Yep. And then bang, he's running flat and hard with guys off his shoulder. Yep. That set up three tries. Should have been three. I think, mate, one was missed.
100%. I think that's probably the first time that I've seen Richie in a while play like that. You know, very on the ball and just an instinctive, and having those guys off him,
playing off him.
He looks. It was those flashy touches. Like, not, it's not flashy touches. Sorry, just those simple touches. You know, putting the ball out in front, little dummy out, little pop, and just putting people into space, which he does at the Crusaders. I see it all the time in training and even in games as well. And mate, I thought, sorry.
No, sorry, but just that one with Coles going through, because he is such a threat out of the back of that three, they Aussie jammed in on him, and that creates the hole. Like, nothing, not taking anything away from Colsey, exceptional line, but we spoke about last week, he is the best decision maker out the back of a pot of three of whether to run, pass, or, you know, crossfield kick.
Yeah. And it must be a security blanket for him as well, knowing that shape as well, because he plays it a lot at the Crusaders, and so, you know, he's so used to that. To that style, and look, it's great to see it at that All Black level that they're playing that, and he's having that freedom where he's very familiar with that kind of shape. But mate, coming back to what I thought really helped as well, mate, Beauden Barrett at 15, he was electric, mate, and I think we can't underestimate his ability.
How many defenders
at
beaten,
mate? I know we talk about his attacking game, and you know the public eye would be like, what a great attack game, which it was, but I don't think you can underestimate having that double pivot, man, especially in that shape, it just helps Richie, the communication skills. But then if you can get that pass away and you've got another ball player like Bodie, who has great distribution skills with the run, kick, and passing, I think it's going to be an evolution in the All Black game, which we'll see in a much more improved around that as well.
I think you're right. But I felt like there was a clear, Richie was first go-to, Bodie was great from the back. Whereas in the World Cup, maybe it was a little bit, who is the pivot? But it looked like it was very much Richie first. If he's not available, Bodie will step up. But a lot of Bodie's damage was done from the back. You know, coming, you know, counter-attacking from the back, creating opportunities and really injecting himself into that game. And as you also alluded to, is not just his attacking game, his ability to organise defence, you know, and having played with him at the Blues, like, he is awesome vocally about what's happening both sides, what's in front of you, and putting guys in the right spot. And again, I think that's why, you know, the All Blacks tackled at 86, 87%. I know they're probably looking for 90. And the Wallabies, he was a big factor in why the Wallabies tackled at 73%, you know?
Yep. Can't wait to get to Caleb Clark. Can't wait to get to him.
Well, let's do that now. It's time for our performance of the week with Healthspan Elite. They're the first nutrition supplier to the All Blacks. They've been with them for 5 years, and they provide supplements and dietary stuff to keep them on top of their health and their performance. Now, you can trust them because they batch test everything. They give you peace of mind to know that you are safe. Now, guys, performance of the week. Tell me, both of you, it's Caleb Clark.
Not for me.
For me.
Not for me.
For me. I'm going to take his. Obviously, he's a big advocate for the Blues boys, but, mate, I thought Caleb Clark was tremendous. Every time he touched the ball, he just looked threatening. And he was threatening. You know, over 100 metres, defenders beating him right, left and centre, and every time he got a touch, you know, I can't imagine the last time someone that's got a standing ovation, you know, after a game like that.
That young,
you know. So I think the New Zealand public had a pretty good understanding how special that performance was. And the biggest thing I liked about Caleb around that, he was, you know, he was humble as well. Straight after his match, he had the press conference, and he's just so level-headed and so mature for such a young kid. You know, you've had a great test match, you've played well, you know, you're going to get all the applause in the world, but, you know, it's very down to earth, and, you know, no doubt that comes from his background as well, with Irani as well.
I think the biggest thing about that is his identity isn't a rugby player. His identity's, you know, more than that, and what he can give to his community and his beliefs is probably more of a priority for him than Caleb Clark, the rugby player. And I think that's why he comes across and is so well liked by the public. Like, you know, to get a standing O in your first start, like, it was a great performance, but it was exceptional. Like, it was, you know, hair raising on the back of your neck sort of stuff. One, I didn't expect it. I was like, oh yeah, he played well. But, you know, that's how, you know, infectious his personality is, I suppose. So look, I thought he was great. Don't get me wrong. He was, you know, definitely one of the best players on the park. I just, the reason why I didn't choose him is maybe the way I see test match footy being won.
It's by hookers.
Is, well, Colsey is my man. Colsey is my man this week. Just because he's built for test match footy. You know, like, you mentioned it, Brim. He set the tone. Although he got piss bowled by Taniela Tupou, he stood up, he grabbed him, you know, and he set the tone and set a bit of a brawl. Aaron Smith scored. He ran, I would say, 20 metres to rub Solokai Lotu on the head. And it's just those little niggly moments. Like, I know it sounds silly, but he just set the tone. He, you know, his game around the field, the lineouts, the scrums, and his just his experience, his edge. He's everything test match footy is about. And his steel and his leadership in that pack in that first 40 brought about the success of the All Blacks. And that's why, and not being biased to hookers, I just think he was a big factor in why there was a big turnaround in mindset, attitude, and that physical dominance.
I suppose without Brody as well, who provides a very similar approach, the All Blacks are used to having two of those guys, aren't they? And then, you know, last week they were starting with neither of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can't look past the skip. He brings it every week as well, and Sam Kane, but they're used to probably having three or four, you know, like they're bruising sort of style players. But Colsey, as I said, built for test match footy, big factor in it. And I interviewed him after the game, and I mentioned that 3-2 sort of set up attacking wise, and I, you know, and he just goes, mate, we're just going to keep evolving. Yeah, he's just, yeah. You know, he's the sort of player that after the game, he'll shake your hand, have a beer with you, and, you know, none the wiser. But he's also the same player that if you're on the ground and you expect to be picked up, he'll push you back down.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Jip, because I wonder if, because it's very Dave Rennie-esque, that kind of, you know, that kind of play. And I'd be interested to see if the Australians would bring that kind of, it's not dirtiness, it's just, you know, that competitive edge and getting in someone's face and letting them know that you're here.
I think they brought it. I think Harry Wilson did another shot on Bodie. It's just, you either, you know, you can, you know, and Tupou brought it. Like, he matched Colsey. Like, you got to give him credit. He was into it. He just ran out of gas and got subbed, obviously. But it comes with experience. You know, they're still a young team. And all those sorts of players, like, you know, Colsey and Guzler and that will come of age. You know, I think Ned Hannigan was exceptional yesterday. You know, ball in hand, his physical prowess. He's the sort of player, with along with Harry Wilson and Hooper, that can make up a really tough trio. I think they still had aspects of, like, they got held up. There was, you know, escorting penalty. And there were just, due to the fatigue and the speed of the nature of that first 40 and how many tackles they had to make and technically had to miss and then backtrack, allowed them to run out of steam. But they still showed plenty of promise. Like, we can't,
flip
it on its head. The scoreline, just like last week, I don't think 16-all was fair. I just don't think this week it's fair reflection.
There's so many potters that they can take out of it. You know, if their skill execution was on just a bit better, you know, I think we're probably having a much tighter test match. You know, there's, like you said, there's a couple of times they should have scored. Like that one, I think, and another thing that I thought set the tone as well was it was very similar to when we played in Wellington. They got a massive line, they got a line break, and we're getting really close, to pretty much right on the try line, and we get a turnover right then
they
and
butchered,
there.
They butchered that. I know the one you're talking about, when Tupou goes through the middle.
Yep. Yep.
And he puts it up to Solokai Lotu, yep. and he goes the opposite direction and gets tackled, and Artie gets a turnover. If they had popped it and spread it wide, the damage had been done. And from there, the All Blacks actually ended up all the way down there, and Aaron Smith scores.
Correct.
And that was the turning moment for me. I was just like, oh, you know, that was just crucial because they'd done the damage. And then from there, Tamua kicks, and Tamua goes off, who was actually created a lot for them at first receiver. I felt like O'Connor really ran the ball a lot, which promoted Tamua to run that first receiver role and was pulling guys off holes, running to the line quite well.
Mm.
Then losing him, I think, was a big factor in those two young midfielders.
Yep.
They were exceptional as individuals, But in terms of having that experience and game management,
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if they go with that. They try the second pivot unit, or they're just gonna, you know, Matt. I think Matt losing Matt Tamua, mate, was massive.
And we if he's not back, I reckon O'Connor at 12 and get Lolisio in there
at first receiver.
He's like for like with Moana, I reckon. You go back to when the Brumbies played the Chiefs.
Yep.
He put on a clinic.
Yep. Yep.
So that inside back combination that they've got going on, are you happy that the Wallabies are looking in the right direction with what they've got right now with White, O'Connor, Tamua? Is that the future for them over the next 4 years?
I think they've got a lot of options at nine. I think White's got the ability to play a certain style, but if the conditions don't suit, you know, like a live wire like McDermott, Gordon, they'll get a chance in a Rennie coach side. He won't not give them a chance. I like O'Connor at 10, but and Tamua, I think with that experience, it's definitely one to look at. But over the next 4 years, I would probably think Lolisio will come of age and be their pivot, their main go-to pivot. He just is a natural 10 with a lot of X factor, but with a lot of maturity and ability to have great game management. From what I've seen at Super Rugby level, obviously test match levels is next step up, but put O'Connor at 12 for the next test if Tamua's not available and Lolisio at 10 and you know, Posami or Patera at 13, I just think they were like-for-like players, Hunter Posami and Jordan Patera in that 12-13 role yesterday, once Tamua went.
You mentioned earlier about the missed tackles from the Wallabies. There were lots and lots of them.
It was 40.
40. Yeah, a whole heap of them. Now, what does that come down to, Brent? Is that just straight-up one-on-one tackling, or is there something wrong with their defensive setup?
It's interesting because, you know, it's week to week. You know, obviously they had such a great defensive effort against them in Wellington. But then Gyps probably talked about as well, it's that repeating that effort or trying to take it to the next level, which is tough. And all it takes, it's 1 or 2% where you might be a little bit off and it comes to a situation where, you know, they're at about 70-75% tackling success rate. You know, if you're going to have those kind of stats against an All Blacks team that were physically a lot better, their breakdown was quick and they changed their shape a little bit to nullify it. You know, it's going to be a tough day at the office. So I can imagine that Dave will get them back home, which is going to be a different team as well. They're always going to be better back at home. But yeah, I can't imagine they'll be missing and being at about a 70%, 75% tackle success rate moving forward in the rest of the series.
For me, it was the All Blacks' ability to, we've spoken about it, their transition from defence to attack. Like, they're a team that doesn't look for the penalty. Artie gets it to his chest, or it was Shannon gets it to his chest, and they play. Leonard Brown cuts with Colsey. Colsey finds Aaron Smith down the right-hand side, and you're just constantly backtracking in warm temperatures, and it's not through a lack of one-on-one tackling. It's the scrambled D just got caught, and it was more to the way the All Blacks attacked and played and their mindset to keep the ball alive that caught them off guard, you know, because if you don't have a set D-line, I think with them defensively when they're set, they're pretty good, really, you know, for the most part. It's more around the All Blacks style was just, they were brutal, man, and the conditions allowed it, but they stuck, the passes were sticking, it was... I don't know how they didn't run out of gas.
I think even if you think about the Australians with that as well, like I thought their skills around that click and KBA was really good as well. And I think that'll be a part of their game that's consistently going to keep getting better, especially with Dave Rennie getting there. Because we know that the All Blacks, you know, they score a lot of their tries based around there and putting teams under that amount of stress. So they've just got to keep backtracking. And like you said, I saw on the weekend, they missed that many tackles because of that. But there were some passages of play where I thought the continuity and the skill set from their forwards and to their backs was pretty good as well. But unfortunately, those little mistakes that we've talked about with Kurundrani and those kind of scenarios, it just let them off the hook, let the All Blacks off the hook. So it'll be a positive for them moving forward. And I'd like to think being in Australia, it'll be dry as well. So it'll be similar conditions, probably a little bit more humid, which could have... which might hamper the skill set a little bit. As you know, when we play in Aussie, it's sometimes it looks dry, but there's that much humidity around that it's quite wet. So, but they can take a lot of confidence out of that. And I know that Dave Reno will be driving on that factor as well, because I reckon at this stage, the All Blacks are just a little bit better when it comes to their click attack.
But just on that, where you said the Aussies' click attack was good and that they're keeping the ball alive and it was just maybe that last pass, I felt like that was a reflection of the adjustment the All Blacks made defensively. Like the best example is towards the end, they had a scrum and they ran ran two short ball lines and they went out the back to O'Connor, who then gave it to Kotabeti, and Jack Goodhue went in, Moanga went in, and Anton went in. And Damien was in a position where it was, if he let Kotabeti have it, it was a 3-on-1. He saw his inside went in and he bang went in and he got nowhere near him, but because of his defensive pressure, it forced that error and Kotabeti knocked it on. And it was, I think that's where they forced so many turnovers this week, is they were committed together. They went together. So if they rushed, they trusted their mate's decision and they went, you know, like they trusted the inside and they followed him. And then if they were passive, then they trust the inside and work towards the sideline. I felt like there was a much better connection defensively.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah. And especially on the edge, I thought, you know, the combination of Jack Goodhue and Anton Leonard-Brown, their defensive efforts were fantastic. You know, I thought Jack was a lot better defensively and just looked a lot more settled than he has probably the last couple of test matches. So I know we did talk around the selection issue around whether it were going to be Rico or Anton, but yeah, I actually thought they were pretty solid, those two. And just on attack as well, I thought Jack looked a lot better as well. You know, those little touches that he's probably done at the Crusaders around that linking play with the pass or an offload. Yeah, I thought he was a lot better this week. I don't know what you thought about that, Jip.
Yeah, I was right near him at one stage down the edge. And like when you're playing him, you actually don't appreciate his skill set and his time on the ball. Like he gets the ball, there's a man on him, he shapes inside and gets it away and then just gets hit. But like he's still, I was just like, geez, that's good. You know, like and like I got to see it close up and his ability, but what I noticed most out of them and Anton is defensively, man, they are just everywhere. Like the Ks, I'd love to see both of their GPS numbers. Like he got Jack got subbed, and we all know once you sit down, it's quite hard to get cold. Peter Umanga Jensen goes off. He comes back on. I think he made another 10 tackles. Like he just looked like he was ready to go again. I thought the midfield worked really well for what they were there to do, was to shore up the defense. And I still will argue they will never have, those two players will never have the X factor of what Rico has. But in terms of their partnership and what they still offered in attack, I think his attack was much better. I think, again, I hate to harp onto it, but the shape, the face play shape allowed them that comfortable nature of what they used to, you know, Moanga and Goodhue to flourish.
As a combination, the critique I've heard of them as a combination is maybe the lack of a pure direct runner. But I thought that Jack took that role on pretty well. Yeah.
Especially if he hadn't got that forward pass from Kane, that was like he went straight through that transition. Mm. But he was good straight off the scrum before Aaron Smith scored.
Yep, he was over the line.
He that crash ball bang sucked in defenders and then created that opportunity down for Nuggie to take. He was definitely, you know, a strong performer.
Mm. So is he the 12 and Anton's the 13? Have they got that right?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, it looks like that's what they're sticking with.
Mm. Well, he, yeah, Jack had a lot of time at the Crusaders this year, playing at 12, and I think in that position, it's a lot more directing. It's kind of second pivot, very similar to Tamua, around that second pivot and helping out with the communication and another pivot to run your game. And you know, Jack, you know, was an out and out center probably for the Crusaders before we moved into 12 this year. And I think it's just taken a bit of time. It's just been taking a bit of time, and he had a great teacher in Ryan Crotty, be able to learn off. And for him, I think the more time that he's going to get in that jersey at 12 at that level, he'll make those different, those little improvements slowly. And because, you know, you think about it, you know, I would have thought they would have gone Anton at 12 and Jack at 13. That's what you would have thought with the combination they did at the World Cup. So they must be seeing that Jack is their 12 moving forward. And that's the kind of the role, you know, we know that he's strong defensively and makes good decisions around with us on attack. But I think that second pivot role when helping out Richie and the 10 and that connection with the 15, I think that'll be his, the direction for him moving forward in that environment, I think.
It's interesting, isn't it? If you were to then have Rico come back in, who would you have at 12? Would Jack remain the pure 12? And Anton's obviously probably a better bench option.
Well, he's played that 23 role a lot, hasn't he? And with Rico's ability to go to the wing, that suits. But I would love to see, like, you look at the North-South game, like Anton and Rico were pretty good. Like, I'd like to see more of them together, but I think after yesterday's performance, Jack's, you know, really taking control of that 12 jersey. I've also got to commend, because the coaching group of the All Blacks had a hard week, I reckon. Like, they were put under the pump a little bit. And the adjustments they made in team structures and you know, selections, you know, they didn't stick, you know, some injury force, some not. You know, they didn't stick to what we thought maybe of giving that team another run. Like, they've definitely got their own identity, I think we found out after this week. And you've got to commend their ability and their coaching group for what they did. Because, you know, I harped on at length about Rennie last week, and I think it's fair to acknowledge that Fozzie and his group were pretty exceptional in this week leading to this to get the result they got, as well as the leadership group. Yeah. As well as the leadership group.
Yeah. Just around the game as well, what I did like as well, Jip, is seeing the variety of their kicking game. And, you know, they went to a lot of contestables off nine, which they did in Wellington and in Auckland. But then as the game went later on, they mixed that up a little bit with getting contestables off Richie, off 10, and being able to put pressure through that way. And we've talked about Bodie around his ability to be that third option that puts the kicks in behind, like that lovely grubber that he put in behind in that one of the passages of play. You know, that kind of variety in their kicking game, I think, you know, that's going to put teams, in, especially Australia, in a lot of pressure. So I don't know what you would have seen on at the ground level, but I just thought that the different point of attack where they put them in a vice, I thought it was really well done. Really, really well done.
Well, we all know I'm a big fan of contestables. So if you're doing contestables, I think it's a big part of the game. That's, you know, it's an attacking kick, isn't it? It's not a negative kick. It's an attacking kick. But I think they got their balance right between going long, short, and grubbers. Like, even, just even looked like, again, I know it's weather permitting, but, you know, they played eyes up footy. I know that's so stupid to say, but when they're doing a rolling maul and it veers to the left, and, you know, TJ pops down the sideline, bowls off Nick White, does a little grubber, and, you know, Cody Taylor nearly picks it up. And, you know, a lot of it was off the cuff stuff that they're doing as well. You know, Paddy's holding the ball up here and throws it. You know, that shows the signs of a confident team and believing in what they've done during the week and being instinctive, you know, like not robotic. And that's when you know the All Blacks are at their best, when they front physically, but then they're just pulling trigger on what they see. And that's why I think Richie looked the best he has in the All Black jersey on Sunday.
And speaking of TJ, he's signed with the Japanese club for next Super Rugby season. So he's going to be missing Super Rugby and playing for the Red Hurricanes over in Japan.
So that's a million-dollar deal, isn't it?
It's a big move, yeah. Between Powerade and, you know, everything else that TJ's got, he's got sponsors coming in left, right, and center. Oh,
look, I thought he was outstanding on the weekend, and you can just see the competitive juices that were flowing inside of him.
You should have seen him when they were going to that line-out in the 83rd minute. He was just roaring at the forwards, like, just like, they're not getting across, and he just was... He was in the zone, and it was like, yep, yeah. he was just demanding, and that's what you want to see in, you know, an All Black. But an All Black leader, he is going well.
And that's the best thing I think about. We're very fortunate in this country. You know, we've got Aaron Smith, who, you know, arguably is one of the best, probably one of the best halfbacks, and is one of the best halfbacks in the world. But the difference between TJ and Nuggie is bugger all. You know, I know styles of play, it's different, but, you know, the amount of impact he comes up, brings off the bench, you know, straight up, first up, you know, smoke someone, and, you know, he rips the ball, and you can just see his intent, and, you know, he's giving Nick White a bit of heat as well. But, and when you've got that kind of fire and, you know, that kind of competitiveness, and nothing, you don't lose anything. You don't lose anything when Nuggie goes off, maybe a little bit with
you almost gain it because he's fresh against a tiring team, you know, and his energy and his intent can almost, when you've been out there 60 minutes, you know, like, especially if he hits a forward, because he can hit forwards just as hard as forwards hit forwards, you know, so
it's a real lift. They always talk about 1-2 punches, but, mate, it's a 1-1 punch.
Yeah, you know,
that's the way I see it, and we're very fortunate that we have that in our ability to have two guys like that that can sway games and influence games in different ways.
With that, and if you talk about Coles at the start of the game, TJ is that, isn't it? And that is quite an amazing thing to have.
Well, it's test match. As I said, just like Colesy, like, they're built for test match footy. That intent and their competitive attitudes they never turn off. And it might sound stupid, like. You know, it's not saying that they're not built for Super Rugby, but some guys are really good at Super Rugby, but then test match footy is just a step above because of that intent. It's whereas, you know, they're sort of the opposite. Like, they're at their best in the black jersey playing test match footy, from where I look at it.
You must have butted head with Colesy a few times, Chipper. What kind of words do you get in the first scrum?
We're two hotheads, mate. We don't say too much because there's a respect there, but we certainly go at each other. But yeah, like, we're two hotheads. I just don't quite have the speed and the agility of Dane Coles to warrant 80 tests for the All Blacks.
You don't say too much.
No, we don't. Honestly, we don't. We say a simple hello, and then it's she's all action. We'll do most of our talking to the referee. The poor ref gets more of our chat than but no, like, we probably did when we were young, but now we're reasonable mates. So it's more like you once you cross the line, you're not there to chew the fat or make jokes. She's all business.
Speaking of the referee, you know, we had an Aussie ref on the weekend. I know there hasn't been anything, I suppose, untoward or controversial happen, but I haven't felt a problem with having a Kiwi ref one week and an Aussie ref the next. It seemed fine to me, and they understand the styles of play that these two teams are playing, and it creates a spectacle. Why do we need to bring guys from all over the world if we can have this and it's better?
I think we're lucky that we've got those boys that are refing that are... in that kind of Super Rugby kind of feel. So they've got a really good understanding that they're reffing it at Super Rugby level, whether it be Super Rugby Aotearoa or Super Rugby AU. So they've got a really good understanding of what the style of play is being played. Whereas sometimes I feel when the Northern Hemisphere refs come over and they ref us, they're just not, I don't feel they're in sync. They're in sync with how we play, and they actually dictate a lot of the way of how the game goes and actually have an influence on the game. So I find that, you know, we talk about how well they ref our boys, the one Angus Gardner and Paul Williams. You don't hear much of it. You know, you just, like, they've done a good job because there hasn't been anything bad. So I think it's been a real positive having them, and you know, so I don't know.
But they own their mistakes. Like, Rico's foot on the touch. It's just, if you just front things, it's not like he meant to miss that in Wellington. He had great control. Angus Gardner is one of the best refs, if not the best, going around. Like, he's got a great rapport with players, and to the point that it's, you know, he'll talk in his time, but it's respectful. Like, he's not trying to make it about him. He's trying to make it about a spectacle for the fans and playing his part in making the game flow. Paul Williams is the same. Ben O'Keefe was on the touch on the weekend. He's another one that, you know, is up and coming as well. And I think the biggest thing for those men is that their priority is to make it a spectacle for the fans. And that's probably the difference than most. And I hadn't thought of it like that, Bryn. I think that's a great point that you say. When they come down here, they're used to a different style of play, and you know, seeing things that they're not used to. That's a very fair point.
The other thing for me is that, you know, when you look at the usual international season, the refs go week by week and they're assigned to a certain game in a certain country, and they can't just, you know, pop over to another country to do a game. These guys are doing minor team cup, then they're turning up to a test match. They're getting lots of practice in, you know.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good thing for all of us in all of our professions. You know, the more often you do it, the better form you feel in.
Yeah, and they're working as a three consistently, so they're getting to know each other and understanding trends and things that, you know, that certain refs will have focus areas as them as individuals, and then the touch judges will learn that. So they'll be looking at the areas that they know that sometimes they miss, sort of thing, you know. So it, having that group of three continuously working, I don't know if they're going to Aussie as a three, but it would make sense if they did.
I'd hope so, because they were fantastic. I thought they were great, so it'd be great to have them on.
Yeah, and in the long term, I mean, we don't know when COVID's going to go away. And let's face it, the chance of Northern tours and things like that are probably quite a while away. It makes sense. And, you know, I think the fans will feel it when they see something different. You know, they'll get used to this.
You can just tell with the spectacle of how the game's been played. You know, the last two test matches, even one that's in wet conditions where you think that a ref might dictate a little bit more with errors or just with the flow of the game. But, you know, for refs, you know, if they're not talked about, then that's when they've had a pretty good game. You know, they're talked about when they have a shit game. Unfortunately, yeah. that's the kind of role that they have, and it's no different to us players, you know. Some players, you know, could play 30, 40 games just being real consistent. They have one shocker, and then that's the headlines. So it's no different for refs, and you know, we've got to applaud good reffing. You know, those boys have been really, really good, and again, we've talked about it before, have just a really good understanding of feel of what the rugby style has been played at the moment, and it comes back to them seeing it at Super Rugby level and then being able to have that same influence and the understanding of how the game's been played at test level.
Let's talk South Africa then, pulling out of the Rugby Championship. Yeah. Chipper, what are you thinking?
They're in a position that is challenging in terms of the travel and getting players together. And they've obviously taken pride in the fact that they're world champions, and potentially that could have played a factor. And then outside of that, there's been no secret that they've not been a fan of some political decisions and you know, I suppose relationships off the park have been challenged, and they've taken to that not too kindly either. So I think there's a number of factors at play. Can't put my finger on what's the most dominating, but when players that start maybe not wanting to come down and are their leaders and their quality players, then I think you're always going to struggle. Whatever, I think you can almost park the political stuff. If your senior leaders aren't keen to travel and they don't want to get down here, well, you know, most of your group's going to follow. And I'd say that's probably been the biggest deciding factor.
Mm-hmm. Ross, do you think they'll bring another team in?
No, they've gone to Tri Nations.
Just the three?
Yeah, it's too late. But I mean, it would have been good to bring in, the best of the rest from, you know, Australia and New Zealand or whatever. Or, you know, if you can't get all the top Pacific Island players probably down from Europe, but maybe you could have collated. There are plenty of good Pacific Island players based down here who aren't available for the All Blacks or the Wallabies. You know, they could have done something there. But I suppose at that shorter notice, it's logistically probably pretty difficult. It's already, just with these three teams, pretty logistically difficult. Like, by the sounds of it, if the Brisbane border doesn't open up to New South Wales by the start of the competition, the teams are going to be flying into Brisbane the day of the game, playing, jumping on a plane and flying back, and all staying within their bubble within that. That's a tough day out. Like, already this championship without them is hard.
Yeah. And if you're talking around test, that kind of preparation as well, we know how tough it is to play when you're flying on the same day, and whether it's an early start or not. So I hope the borders do open, because preparation wise it's pretty tough. They'll bite down on the mouth gunner and get it done, but
as long as it's the same for both teams. I think it's always tough when it's like, if you're traveling to someone's ground, like if you're traveling on a bus the day of the game, or you're flying in the day of the game to someone's home venue and they're sleeping in their own beds, then I think that is an advantage. It's a huge advantage, we 100%. Know that 100%. But if they're both going from Sydney, day of the game, that's pretty fair And the thing we know about COVID is you have to be flexible. It's just the way it is. It's just the new age. And I think players are so used to it. Management are so used to it. You know, we were talking about getting guys back for Christmas, I don't know, 4 weeks ago. Now we don't even need to worry about it because there's not even a fourth team there. You know, it's ever changing. So you just got to work on your feet. And I just think everyone's aware of that now. So I just don't think it's going to be a factor. Well, from where I sit anyway, how can you not expect something to change? You could plan, you could plan that you're going to fly the day of the test, and then that week they go, oh, no, actually, the border's open, you can go Thursday. You know, you just don't know. It's just something you can't complain about because it is just the nature of the beast now.
Mm. And for the All Blacks, I think they have the bye after that game anyway. So it's not such a biggie, even if they do a real tough day. They've got a couple of weeks to get themselves prepped for that last game against Argentina. So, you know, as far as they're concerned, it's not that bad.
No, exactly. No. Exactly.
I read today New South Wales had zero cases. And apparently if there's 27 more days of that, then we can have a bubble with New Zealand and then the players don't even have to go into quarantine on the way back.
Keep doing what you're doing, Sydney. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, totally. To the New Zealand. Keep doing what you're doing,
man. When you go not just the All Blacks want to go to Sydney. Yeah. Tell you that. A lot of Kiwis would probably want to go there as well.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Now, I can't go through this without touching on a Blues player, of course. Alex Hodgman.
Oh, yeah.
What a debut. He came on at the 30-minute mark. The scrum was struggling at the start, and I think it got better not just based on Alex's arrival, but due to that fatigue factor that I was talking about in that first 30 minutes actually caught up with Tupou and Slipper and Painga Mosa. But he came on, got a penalty off his first scrum, was immense around the paddock, and had 50 minutes. The game was in the balance when he came on. And he had 50 great minutes for a man on debut. Just shows the growth and where he's come to. And I was just so proud seeing him out there. You know, he was close to nudging Colsey off my performance of the week, but I couldn't look past the master that is Colsey. But I thought he was exceptional. And then just lastly, Bryn, before you jump in, Patrick Tupulotu running the All Black lineout, 113, lost one. He took. I thought when Scott Barrett came on, they might change. But I spoke to him after the game, and he goes, "Look, the first few were a bit jittery, a bit nervy. The Wallabies knew it was an area of potential weakness, so they were yelling heaps, so they couldn't get the call. But he stayed composed. Colsey stayed composed. They got good ball off it. It's great to see his development and growth is continuing at the international level. He'll be better for it now." And he'll be able to take more charge, I think, and get alongside Sammy Whitelock to keep learning but also keep contributing.
I think just with talking about Alex, mate, you know, it's great, you know, you talk about Caleb Clark, you know, a guy that's come on the scene and, you know, has been rewarded very early with an All Black jersey. But you look at Alex Hodgman, a guy that's, you know, plied his trade for a while now, and it's great to see a moment like that where a guy can just come on, you know, in a pretty tough part of the match, and just come on and, you know, seem like he's been there for 20, 30 tests. You know, I thought his scrummaging was awesome. Obviously, being a halfback, I know a lot about scrummaging, Jip, but I think if you can even see from the sideline, you know, the way he controlled that scrum and, you know, got a few penalties, it just comes back to his growth. Because I think you'd probably say, Jip, you know, from where he was probably 3 to 4 years ago to where he is now, he's just so much better as a player with his growth and his scrummaging and the way he has been as a player.
Yeah, he was always mobile. That was his strength, and his set piece stuff needed the work, and he's put that work in. And I think a lot of credit has to go to Tom Coventry, but more importantly, Ben Afiaki has worked really closely with him. He's our Blues scrum coach, and he's been fantastic for a lot of our boys. And also, I think the competitive environment for his spot at the Blues has helped. You know, him and Carl have been going head to head for minutes, which, you know, means you have to be at your best all the time for the whole year. So when he goes into that environment, you know, he's not used to, or he's not taken aback by that competitive energy to get a black jersey. So I think all those factors play, but more importantly, the most important factor is his work ethic. Hands down, works his ass off.
We look at a lot of these props over the last couple of years who've been kind of maturing at that age. You know, I suppose when Owen Franks came on the scene as a 21-year-old playing great test footy, people's idea of how old a prop should be, you know, kind of came down a lot. But now you look at these guys over the last couple of years, whether it be Carl or Alex, they've come into this team in their late 20s. And by then, probably the general public would have considered them journeymen. Suddenly, even Joe,
even Joe Moody started quite late.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question on the propping? You've had a lot more experience than me, mate. I feel like probably the last 24 months, the propping role in a selection of a prop has changed. Like, it's gone from very set piece dominant. You want to be like, you know, Owen Franks and being good at your set piece, your core roles in that sense. And then it probably got to a little bit of a hybrid of being really mobile. And, you know, you look at the likes of Angus Tarvow and Atu Moley last year at the World Cup selections and that. Where do you feel that there's that sweet spot of the perfect prop that you're looking for?
Oh, you want to have an all-round game. But I always think you've got to go to bread and butter. I mean, set piece has to be crucial. You can see, like, you just don't win games without being physical at the breakdown and winning set piece ball. You just won't win it. So I think that should be the priority. But these props now know that, so that they've got the skill set and the ability to move around the park. And I think there is a greater expectation now for that mobile prop. And Gus probably changed that. He's another one that was a late, you know, he played 100 Super Games before he had, you know, got his test match call up. And you know, and I suppose the reason why they go so well when they get in there is because they've had experience. They've bided their time, and they're more mature. And Owen Franks is a one of a kind, one in a generation prop player. Like he was exceptional, you know, and so was probably Tony Woodcock. He got in there at 21 as well, you know. But they're just once in a generation. If Ben Alfiaki hadn't had his concussion, he debuted around 25, 26 as well, you know, and he would have been kicking on. So I think for most part, that's when props start, you know, finding themselves and maturing. And then I think you see the best of them 30 plus.
Yeah.
When they're 30 plus.
You're John O'Fallon earning $1 million a year.
God, he's still got it, doesn't he?
Isn't he? Jeez. Oh,
his skill set's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you get a young mobile guy and you say, okay, we're going to put 7 years into you, 6 or 7 years, and then we'll see how good you are. It's quite interesting because there aren't many, in fact, I don't think there are any positions in rugby outside of that where you'd be willing to put that level of investment into a player to get them to where they need to be.
Well, if you look at another position, you look at the wingers, you know, it's the complete opposite. You know, you go 7 or 8 years, you mature and you get better as you get with the age of when you're a prop. But man, you look at the All Blacks now. George Bridge, Sevi Reece last year with the two wingers. You know, George's obviously been injured, but, you know, Caleb Clark comes along. And before that, Riku comes along. And, you know, the chops and changing of a winger is so much different to a prop. But that's why I love the different positions in rugby, because different stages in your career is where you're blossoming. You know, and props are no different. They age. They get better with age, whereas I think, you know, that winger stage, it's very 21 to that 26, 27, especially if you're a winger kind of age range. So,
well, you have to learn the art of scrummaging and line out lifting and mauling, and that just comes with time. Like you can't, it's such a technical beast. It's just, like you say, Bryn, it's just the opposite. And I think putting 6 or 7 years of investment into a guy that, you know, is going to come into his prime is crucial to our game. And we continually do it. And it's probably, you know, that's why New Zealand rugby have got a successful rate of when one key prop goes, or hooker or lock or type five member, they've got another one snapping their heels. Sometimes, you know, guys like Tupovai are young, and then other guys are not so. So I think that type five position is an area where you just get better and better with age.
It probably shows in the way that the European clubs come down here too, right? Because you don't often see them raid and come down and grab, you know, a prop from our war chest. They wait until they've got to the point where they're really successful, then take them.
Yeah, but they've also got guys up there that are playing at 40, 42 that are just, because their game's different. All they care about is scrum.
Set piece.
You scrum. They don't need to interplay up there. So, and they've got their own beast up there. And that's why it's not such a threat, I suppose, for them to be stolen when they're young, because they've got to put the investment into them to make them good, and then they become on the international stage, and then that's when, you know, you lose guys, unfortunately, at probably an age where you'd want to keep them, like Charlie Famuina. But he was probably at his peak and is continuing to get better. But he's another, I would say, sort of a freak of a prop with his skill set, sort of like John Afoa.
Good life choices there, eh? 20-year career. That's what it's all about. Yeah.
You're in the front row, mate. You last forever.
Well, who's it? Chris King? Chris King was playing for us not a couple of years, like last year, 2 years ago, and he was like late 30s, or going into his early 40s.
Yeah, 38, yeah.
The bloody Jamie McIntosh was on the field for Otago against Counties on the weekend.
My knees won't work by then, that's for sure. I'll be gone by then.
Yeah, but you can't. The expectation of you is to run nearly 2,500 meters of like high speed meters with a total of 7K or 8K in a game. Whereas front rowers, just like if you can, you know, still have the skill set and ability to get to your rucks and your breakdown and you put in, you know, 10 or 15 scrum efforts.
Yeah, that's where I'm a little bit different.
It's a 23-man game, as they say.
Yeah, that's where I'm a little bit different.
It's a 23-man game.
You couldn't pay me enough to put my head in the scrum.
Yeah, I know, but you couldn't pay me enough to sprint 2.5K either. Again.
That's the beauty of rugby.
Those Ironman athletes like Cameron Brown and stuff like that, they, you know, they get in their best in their late 30s. How come we're not seeing halfbacks in their late 30s then?
Well, you are, Andy Ellis.
Yeah, Andy's find the flag. Come on, Andy, keep going, boy. Yeah. Keep going, mate. He's actually with us this year.
Pity went deep. Pity was like in his prime at that 2015 World Cup. Brin's in his prime, you know, in 4 years. 2023. He'll be ready to go.
Andy gives me hope. Andy Ellis gives me hope. He gives me hope, so.
Yeah, yeah. Can we circle back to the South Africans again? I know we went a long way in the other direction, but have they?
Sorry, we went in that blues direction.
Yeah,
over your left hand shoulder.
We should have Jibber, we should just have a segment. Blues segment. And I'll get him for maybe once every 2 weeks, you know, something.
Well, your Crusaders get spoken up publicly all the time, so you don't need any minutes. I need some minutes just to pump my lads up.
I'm very
Hoskins Susutu should be at 8-2, just quietly. If I get another minute, I'll just discuss that. He's a line-out machine. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. Venture back to South Africa.
Yeah, well, in the weeks in between the Blues weeks, we can have Harbour weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll miss this week, eh? We'll miss the Harbour week this week. We'll miss it this week.
Yeah, oh, no shot at the Shield.
Yeah.
No.
Man, come on, Tunnies. Seriously, come on.
Hawke's Bay were good. Hawke's Bay
tough to watch,
good.
Actually. Yeah. Obviously going
all right, South Africa. What have you got for us?
Have they missed an opportunity here? So, you know, maybe not all of their players would have come. We all know that. We all know what South Africa is going through. And if they came over here with what was essentially a South Africa A team, they could have blooded some guys and some top level football. Even if they weren't necessarily, if they'd only played 4 weeks of other football beforehand, they had a chance to get something that they might not ever get at any other chance in international rugby history. They have a chance now to give those guys experience and not cop any blame for losing. That seems like a good opportunity to me.
Well, we spoke about that at length, and I was a big advocate, is that the pressure was off, that like there was no expectation for them to come down there, backs against the wall. You could galvanise a group and work off that. The other thing I'd like to point out as well, that whatever's gone on, like from a player's point of view, we want to play South Africa, you know, in Super Rugby. You know, we want to play at an international rugby. We want them part of our game. Like this, I'd hate for them to think that was not the case, because they are the world champions for a reason. They're the best to play. The more often we get to play them, the better we will get, and the better our country will get. But potentially an opportunity missed. But we just there's so much going on that we wouldn't have we're not privy to. So we don't know what's occurred or what's been happening. From where we sit, I do think it looks like an opportunity missed. But maybe they just look at test losses as just not acceptable. And their new culture and their new environment is, you know, what Russie's put in place and what their leaders have put in place is just not acceptable. If they're not in the right conditions to perform in that South African jersey for what their public just live and breathe and love it, then maybe they've made a decision based on that as well.
Yeah, I think around that is, I think you're spot on there, Jip. I think, you know, expectations is a big thing. And it's no different for what the expectations are on the All Blacks in that country. You know, they're such lovers of rugby. I mean, we've experienced it firsthand, Jip, how much they love rugby. We think we love rugby, but, you know, the South Africans are, they're mad. You know, they're rugby mad and they just love
Tom's team
getting in behind them. So, you know, I could imagine, you know, having a negative effect, them coming down here, seeing a South African A team and, well, not their greatest, but being in the best possible condition they can to perform at a test level where they are the current world champions. And the expectation is that, you know, you play and act like world champions. So
yeah.
I agree with Jip. I think they have missed an opportunity, but again, there's so much stuff that we don't know that could be, that's happening over there. And again, you know, COVID's been at the forefront of it. And yeah, there's a lot of things that we probably don't know about, but I think it is a missed opportunity. And it's sad, you know, they're one of our oldest foes that we're probably not going to see again. You know, we're not going to see them again unless they come down like the, you know, the Welsh, the English or the French come down for those early June tests. Oh, not the June tests, the early part of the year. So, or we see them in the Northern Hemisphere. But, you know, who knows? I think it's a missed opportunity and we're definitely going to miss seeing them. That's for sure.
We saw how hard it was for both for the All Blacks to click properly in a lot of areas in the first test they play. The next time the Box play, it's going to be the Lions. You know, they're going to step straight into the fire off 18 months without rugby.
They'd have something. They'd have like a fixture against each other or some form of...
If they've pulled out of rugby championship, they must have a plan in place to play some footy.
There's no way you're playing against the Lions 18 months without playing some form of games against each other or something.
Well, we already know how hard it is because Gats was talking about bringing the Lions down here for some games or us up there to play them before they went to South Africa because it is so hard to, you know, get that test match level intensity by playing, you know, like they came here and played the super teams and the New Zealand Barbarians, you know, like obviously Gats has learned from his experience and bringing a group together is quite hard to do. So if he could pick up a test against the All Blacks or the Wallabies before he went to South Africa, so it'd be no different, I'm assuming, for them getting their group together. Because at some point, they're going to have to play footy.
Yep. Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.